8:01 on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Wasn't just the Vancouver Canucks who were in action this weekend. The Abbotsford Canucks got their season underway as well. A 5-3 loss to start the year in Bakersfield. Then they rebounded with their first ever victory as the Abbotsford Canucks. A 3-2 shootout win over the Ontario Reign. Not that Ontario. The other Ontario.
Ontario. I was just looking it up on the Google map. Just around Chino. 45-minute drive from L.A., depending on the traffic, of course.
Let's go to the phone lines now. We are joined by the general manager of those Abbotsford Canucks, Ryan Johnson, now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. I imagine that you must be pretty excited to finally get this thing underway after moving the team all the way across the continent. Going through training camp, going through the preseason, you've now got the Abbotsford Canucks playing actual games. You're going to have your third on Tuesday night when the Canucks take on the Sabres. So it must be an exciting time for you and the club.
Yeah, it is. There's, you know, obviously a lot of logistics involved and great effort from, you know, from our business side, Rob Maloney and his group. I know they've been working effortlessly to get things together on that side of, you know, having our group come together as a staff. Our arena, which is a great facility, but some adjustments and things in the dressing room and just been a lot of logistical things to get to this point and a lot of great work by a lot of people. But at the end of the day, as I said to our group last week, I was just excited to have the puck drop and get back to watching hockey and watching our group play.
I know you're playing hockey now, and we'll talk about the hockey in just a bit, but I'm just wondering, what was the most challenging thing to get set up? Maybe something that you didn't expect was going to be really hard, and it turned out it took a lot of your time.
Well, it wasn't as easy as just up and moving, you know, staff, and we had to basically build from the ground up. I had to make sure staff you know, contractually, and then moving cross country, I had staff that wasn't able to make it. So I had to go through, you know, a hiring process of filling out our group and then a lot of things that maybe you took for granted that you had even within your facility that's like, wow, we're really basically starting an organization from scratch here. So a lot of just fine print that maybe you take for granted that is there, and all of a sudden with 2 weeks to go into camp or stuff, you're kind of like, wow, we still got some work to do here. So it was a great learning process for me and for all of us, and we're still working some of the kinks out, like I said, within our building and having training camp there with our big group was certainly a help to work through some things, but we're getting there, and I'm proud of the group and the work that's gone on by the entire organization and the support from our ownership and Michael Doyle and our group there in Vancouver has been fantastic.
I know it's only been two road games and only one road trip, but we were both curious about how the travel works, because in Utica, everything was nice and close. You could bus pretty much everywhere you wanted. You don't have that right now with Abbotsford. You got to go down. We joked and called it the Sons of Anarchy division, because it seems like all these really tiny cities that you'd hear in Sons of Anarchy. So you've got Bakersfield, Ontario, Henderson, Stockton.
Have you run into any biker gangs?
Yeah. Like, what's the travel like? Like, how, really, from a logistics standpoint?
Well, we've that's been one of the biggest challenges that you asked about is logistically piecing this together. We traveled 2 days ahead of our opening game Saturday. So we left Thursday in almost a 12-hour travel day from the time we left the arena in Abbotsford to actual arrival in Bakersfield was we were almost 12 hours. So you can see how. We just got our group together early last week. I had to add a couple defensemen. We had guys, you know, clearing waivers, and we kind of had three practices as a full group to get ready, which is rare, which was a challenge. I think it showed in a bit of our play. Our coach and staff has done a phenomenal job of trying to get things together in a very short amount of time and work on systems and implement things, but you know, the travel, it is a challenge. It is what it is, and just something that we're going to have to deal with. We've intentionally gone, you know, an extra day ahead to allow us. We had a full travel day Thursday, practice Friday, and able to play Saturday and Sunday. So we're up and going. It's a challenge, but like everything, you got to find a way to work through it.
Ryan, can you tell us about the decision and maybe the discussion you guys had about keeping Klimovich in the AHL or having him in the AHL as opposed to, say, sending him to the QMJHL to play Major Junior?
Well, obviously, he's a big kid. He's mature in his physical attributes. And I think we wanted to give him an opportunity. We wanted to give him some games to see where he was at. Obviously, he played in an exhibition game with our group and then had a small injury that kind of slowed him down in training camp. So we want to give him a look. We want to give him an opportunity to play here and see where he's at. He's done some very good things in the first couple of games, and also recognizing there's things that we really need to dig in on, and that's expected, right? He's a kid we just drafted. He's a young kid, and I think he's taken it all very well and the challenge, and we'll keep moving forward with him. And at the end of the day, as we get further into this, I'll talk with Jim and see where things are at. But I'm proud of the kid. I mean, not just from the game, but the language barrier. He's new to North America. Has jumped right in and done some very good things for us.
When kids come to North America, and I suppose Pod Coles will be part of this conversation as well, what are some of the things that they have to learn?
Well, especially for Danilo right now, it's puck management, getting his feet moving. I mean, the pace of play, as you see with Vasily at that level and Danilo here, the pace of play is a whole nother level of what they're used to. So it's getting their feet moving, giving themselves some separation to use their skill set, and then puck management, making sure that they're making smart decisions, whether it's within 5 feet of our own blue line or 5 feet of the attacking blue line. It's just the back pressure. Like I said, the pace, the physicality is different, and you make it hard on yourself when you don't move your feet. And that's one of the biggest things that we're talking with him right now is his management, his defensive zone awareness, and getting his feet moving and giving himself a chance to play down in the offensive zone below the tops of the circles. That's where he can really change the course of a game with his puck protection, his ability to shoot the puck and make plays. And that's what we've seen that on the power play in the first couple of games. And we just want to make sure we give him an opportunity to do that 5-on-5 as well.
What's his personality like?
Great kid. Very, very eager. You can imagine with the language barrier, with a lot of these kids that we've drafted, I use Google Translator to talk with them, to text with them, and had Trent call with the monitor in his coach's room, use that to be able to communicate on a daily basis with Danilo, and it's worked out great. He's eager. He wants to learn. He wants to do well. We've had John Stevens, who is a great professional, a great person, room with him on the road to help him out and to guide him and get him involved with his teammates and make him feel comfortable and part of the group. So he's been excellent to work with. And like I said, very eager. He's happy to be here. And so it's been, like I said, you're proud of the kid. You imagine an 18-year-old in this situation, just been drafted and coming to North America, language a challenge, food is different, everything, and he's just kind of jumped right in with 2 feet.
Some guys get pretty homesick, and it's understandable, especially like you said, the food is different, the friends and family aren't around, and the language barrier can be really tough. So how can you as an organization make sure that a player feels comfortable and that there isn't that, am I doing the right thing here? I wish I was somewhere else.
Well, we're making sure that he's engaged. I mean, even going through the process of myself, just being a young player, when you feel a part of a team, it's very easy to adapt and to be excited where you're at. We obviously want to help him, and not just he, we have, Carl Plastic as well. We want to support them as far as the language side, getting some help in that regard, which, you know, when you can't communicate, obviously that makes things a bit of a challenge. So we want to help with that. Like I said, we're making sure that he's not sitting in a hotel room on his phone, that he's out having meals and being with his teammates, being around his group. We've got an incredible coaching staff and trainers that engaging these players, making them feel a part of things, making them feel like, this is home away from home, and it makes a big difference. And what their experience is moving forward, it's very important to us.
Ryan, let's talk a little bit about Will Lockwood. There's a lot of Canucks fans that were hoping to see Will make the Canucks roster out of camp. He didn't ultimately. He's down there with you guys. What are you working with him on, and what does he need to do in order to get into the NHL?
Well, Will, as you know, had an excellent camp. He was right there in the discussion right to the very end. I think at the end of the day, you know, the decision to have him either playing limited minutes or maybe in and out of the lineup in Vancouver or playing 18 to 20 minutes here in Abbotsford, again, is continuing to round out his, you know, penalty killing and different parts of that game that I think eventually when he gets there, he never returns. And so that'll be a big focus. And some of his small area puck skills that improved so much last year that he's done an excellent job with, of making sure that he is comfortable doing those things at the NHL level that he's gotten comfortable doing here at this level, I think will be an important part of his game, because he's a guy that I don't think, you know, we can just cap his ceiling of being a fourth line player. He's got a lot better to offer. He's got to be, you know, the best penalty killer on our team. So that's, you know, something that myself and I know Travis Green, you know, made a point to speak with him on when the decision was made. But he is a pro through and through, unbelievable kid with an unbelievable attitude that is going to find his way back there. And he's going to be an important part of our future, that I can tell you that.
We're speaking with Ryan Johnson, the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks. Now, Ryan, you spent some time killing penalties in the NHL. What do these guys need to learn in order to become good penalty killers?
Well, it's just making sure you read, knowing your lanes, knowing the stick position. You watch power play at the NHL level. The personnel and people on the ice. If you are indecisive for a moment, it's in the back of the net. So it's trusting your reads, understanding the lanes, understanding the reads, and what why power plays are doing what they are, what they're setting up, understanding who's on the ice, the complete awareness of what you're doing, and players that have the speed like Will does, encouraging them to pressure up ice, to be able to disrupt the up ice when you can make a D-man stop behind his net, when you can have the bottle a puck or a pass, you know, that's 15 or 20 seconds off the power play that you've just taken off. So a lot of little things that, we've had a few players that we need focusing on that. And to be able to do it and do it a lot at this level certainly helps in that process.
Another guy that Canucks fans thought they might see with Vancouver to start the season is Phil DiGiuseppe. Now, he's a different player almost altogether than guys that we mentioned like Klimovich and Lockwood, because while they're learning their craft and learning how to be professionals, DiGiuseppe's 28 years old. He has over 200 games of NHL experience, and he has a ton of AHL experience as well. With regards to you and Trent and your approach, how much different is it? What is the approach with a guy like DiGiuseppe? Because the goal with all three of these guys that I mentioned is still the same. They all want to be in the NHL. But with DiGiuseppe, I imagine the approach is a little bit different when it comes to you and Trent.
Yeah, another guy that had an excellent training camp and was right there in the discussion to make our team. You've nailed it with Phil, and I've watched him play now for a while. I've wanted him to be a part of our group. I've loved him when he was in Carolina, and then eventually in New York last year. He's a guy that does a lot of things very well. He's a very well-rounded player, defensively aware, can kill penalties, and then has, you know, the puck protection skill and the ability to create down low that we value as an organization. And so, you know, he's a guy that we lean on right now to be a leader and example for our group, and he has done that. And also at the same point, keep him focused on getting back to the NHL. All these guys that come down that were maybe in that conversation is engaging them, making sure that we have the best interest of them, want to keep improving their game as much as we can, regardless of where they're at or age or experience, and getting them ready for, you know, when we do need a player, that they're the next man up.
I know we talked a little bit about the travel. I remember when you guys were in Utica, one of the things that you guys said was great about Utica and the travel there was more time for practice. Is there less time for practice now?
Well, due to our travel, we're going to lose practice days. That's just the fact of the matter. And one of the things logistically that as we're piecing this together, realizing it was just something we have to deal with. But in saying that, bringing on some great resources in our skills coaches, our skating coach that's full time there with us now, is just taking advantage of the days we have, making sure we're getting the most out of them. And like I said, there's not much we can do right now in regards to the travel. It is different and something we're not used to, but we'll adjust and make use of the time that we do have.
We're speaking to Abbotsford Canucks general manager Ryan Johnson here on the Helford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Abbotsford, much like their parent club Vancouver, is back in action on Tuesday night. Ryan, I also wanted to ask you about Jet Wu, because we mentioned a lot of the Canucks prospects right now, almost exclusively a forward, but Wu is a pretty important prospect, one, because he's on the back end, and two, either through transactions or just not drafting a ton of defensemen, he's right at the top of the charts in terms of the Canucks prospect covered. Second year in the American League, he played in 28 games last year with you guys in Utica. Again, small sample size and everything, but where have you seen in terms of growth and maturation with his game?
Well, he's a lot more comfortable. I know the first year in pro for a defenseman especially is a huge adjustment to the pace, the size, the strength of the players. They're often in roles that maybe junior in college that they aren't going to be in pro. I thought Jet did a great job last year of adjusting to that. Obviously, it was a little bit with taxi squads and all that. It was a little bit of a watered-down AHL that I think helped a lot of young players. And I see, even through training camp this year, I just see a more mature Jet Wu, see him more comfortable within his own skin and confident. And I think, you know, the growth with him will be just his reads, especially kind of he's an aggressive player. He likes to be physical and is just making sure that those reads are correct and not, you know, it's one thing to be physical all the time, but to be physical at the wrong times can end up the wrong play. So, you know, I expect him, and has been already in a short amount of time, in a key role for us. And we want him, I think, at the end of the day, to be a guy that can play against top pairings and can be a shutdown guy. The way he skates, the way he moves the puck, that's not saying we're limited any type of offensive contribution on his behalf, but I think at the end of the day, that's going to be his calling card.
You know, you and I have talked about this in the past, and it's how the American League is a very difficult league to play in, especially to break into when you're a young player, maybe coming out of junior. And I noticed in the past that it's always been that second season where guys traditionally with working with you and Trent have kind of taken off. I think like Cole Lind, I remember it was tough in his first year, and then he had a breakout offensively. Obviously, he's no longer with the organization. It was the same sort of thing with Jonah Gadjevich. It wasn't smooth sailing for him in his first year, but then the second year, he really started to find the back of the net. Are you seeing the same sort of progression with Jet Wu with regards to they make that ascendancy in the second year and they get even closer to knocking on the door of maybe being an NHL player?
Yeah, that'll be the hope. You know, it often, you know, very rarely, but it does happen. Do you find young players come in and be elite players at this level right out of the gates? I mean, you watch a lot of high first round picks come in, and it's a struggle. Sometimes, you know, I refer to the AHL as the Christmas League. Like, you often get a player to January 1 where they're really trying to find themselves and within their game, adjusting to the off ice, the newness of being in an apartment around guys that are married or have kids, and all of a sudden it seems January 1 it starts to come together, and then they start finding their way, and by the end of the year they've figured a lot out. And so we've seen that with a lot of these young kids in the past, and I find coming back their second year, the newness of everything is gone. They've got a comfort level on ice and off ice, and then we really see, really start to see them grow and get closer to being NHL players, and we're hoping that's the case with Jet Wu.
How did you feel when Gajovic was claimed on waivers?
Well, obviously I've spent a long time with the kid. I care about the kid as a player and as a person. It's always tough, and to lose a young guy like that organizationally we've put a lot of time in, and like I said, very valuable to us. I thought he had an excellent training camp, was valuable to us as an organization, but that's, the risk of guys going through waivers. And at the same time for Jonah, it's an excellent opportunity. One door closes, one's open for him, an organization that, saw the same things we did in them, and it sounds like they're going to give him an opportunity. So at the same point, disappointing, but happy for the kid that he's going to get a chance to maybe cement himself as a full-time NHLer.
Finally, we'll end in goal, where you've got three guys right now, Spencer Martin, Artur Silovs, and, of course, Mikey DiPietro. What's the plan carrying three guys to get everyone the requisite amount of work that they need to develop their games?
Well, we're taking it a day at a time right now. Obviously, it's vitally important for Mikey, after the challenges of last year, having him on a taxi squad and for a young goaltender not playing. Obviously, it's not a great thing for their development. We want to get Mikey a lot of starts. And in saying that, you look at Silovs and what he did in Spokane, an exhibition against, what was kind of a full group that Seattle sent. He was excellent in that game and was outstanding last night. Made some huge saves here against a very good Ontario team. Faced a shootout situation, overtime. We had a penalty in overtime that he made some phenomenal saves that. He looked calm, very cool for a guy that this was his second AHL start. And then Spencer Martin, who's been a consummate pro. We faced him a lot in Syracuse last year, and he gave us a hard time. And so, it's a good problem to have with our proximity to accessing players. I think we felt initially we would keep three goaltenders and just kind of let it play out as it may and make some decisions where things are at down the road.
The Abbotsford Canucks are back in action Tuesday night, 7 o'clock puck drop, second game in a row against Ontario. Hey, Ryan, thanks a lot for doing this today. We really appreciate it. Best of luck with the rest of the road trip and when you guys get home for your home opener on Friday.
Okay, thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it. We can't wait to get back to Abbotsford in front of our fans there. It'll be a fun weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, we appreciate it too. Thanks, Ryan. That's Ryan Johnson, the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Congrats to both of us. We never referred to them as Utica or the Abbotsford Comets once during that interview.
Yeah, well done to us.
Yes, that was the important thing. That was my biggest takeaway.
Right, yeah. We're so good at this. Not making terrible mistakes constantly. Well, we made pretty bad mistakes.
So this Friday, October 22nd, Abby's home opener against the Henderson Silver Knights.
I hate those guys. I
hated Silver Knights. So that'll be cool, too. It'll be great to get this team back at home. I'll be very curious to see what the attendance is going to be like, actually, because it's the home opener, brand new team.
Will they be allowed to sell it out?
It's a great question.
Will the Canucks be allowed to sell out their home opener? We still don't know, and that's coming up. We need more What We Learns.
Yes, we do.
Send them in to the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. It is the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com.
Real quick, before we go to break, can you grab the poll question? We're going to do that in a second. We need to tell you that the Halford and Brough Show, the final hour, Ryan Johnson, What We Learned, all that great stuff is presented by the Dallari family of Acura dealers, the official automotive sponsor of this show. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We also need to check in on the Regal Grooming Lounge daily poll question. It is Canucks related. It is House of Positivity. Give us the results.
Whose play has been more impressive over the first three games? Is it Connor Garland or Oliver Ekman-Larsson? We are pitting these two new Canucks against each other.
That's right. Fight to the death.
It's a House of Positivity poll question, but really, it's a sly House of Negativity poll question, because in order to vote for one guy, you might have to, you know, break down the other guy.
You think we're bringing them together, but we're driving them apart.
Congratulations to OEL. He is currently leading this poll question with 56% of the vote, which still means 44% of people are voting for Connor Garland. Garland, I think, especially with his game in Detroit, might have become a fan favorite.
The daily poll question is brought to you by Regal Grooming Lounge, bringing a world-class experience to the classic barbershop. Visit them online at regalgrooming.ca. Coming up, as Jason mentioned, it's What We Learns. We need more What We Learns. Hashtag him WWL. What did you learn over the last 72 hours in sports? Let us know. It's your chance to be on the radio. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650.
Ice Cube, baby. 99, baby.
Back into it.
I can do it, put your ass into it.
You can do it, put your back into it.
Yeah. I can do it, put your ass into it.
Put your back into it.
8:31 on a Monday. This was a request for Connor Garland's goal song, right?
Yeah.
Put your back into it. That's a clever play on his reverse hit on Philip Zadina over the weekend. It was courtesy of Scott, I think. One of the many texters we get to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is What We Learn time. Reminder to get those in. Also, a reminder to go check out any of the three Dilawri Acura dealers. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. They're all great. You can't pick a wrong one. If you want to experience the Dilawri difference today, go check them out. All right. Do we want to do What We Learn? Do we want to jump right to the humanoids? Have the humanoids given us enough ammunition to empty the chamber in What We Learned? What do you want to do? Do you have anything you'd like to share with the people that you learned?
Not particularly. I think I had a few What We Learns written down. The Leafs are going business casual. We talked about that already. The Blackhawks are off to a terrible start. We talked about that already. On a serious note, and I did want to mention this. What we learned is that Jimmy Hayes died of a fentanyl overdose.
Yeah.
I guess it's another one. And this has obviously hit us personally in the Vancouver hockey market. We lost Jason Botchford because of an overdose. We lost a lot of people in this province. We lost a lot of people in North America and the world because of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's to be done of it. I think it was the Boston Globe that got some quotes from Jimmy Hayes' family. And his dad was talking about how he fought addiction and how he wasn't. I think he was just like, some people were saying that they were shocked that this happened. And Jimmy Hayes' dad was kind of like, I wasn't.
Right.
Just because he knows what addiction can do. And he had an inkling that Jimmy might have been struggling with it. And Jimmy even admitted that, I think I'm addicted to these pain pills. He got hurt and he got addicted. And we've seen the story play out over and over and over in North America. And sports leagues have to be very cognizant of this.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the reasons that Robin Lehner came out and said, hey, be careful about all the pills that are going out the door, whether they be pain pills, whether they be benzos, whether they be sleeping pills. These pills do have a place in medicine, mm-hmm. and they do have a place if they are used responsibly.
Right.
And unfortunately, some people have trouble with them. and it is on the doctors, and it is on the organizations to monitor what's happening with these players.
It's always a tough transition to go from a very serious subject to what we learned, which are going to be generally lighthearted. But why don't we do the dot matrix one more time, just to break up the monotony of Jason and I talking as we print out some humanoid submissions for what we learned. Here's one from Neil in Windsor. Hashtag WWO what we learned. I learned that the Calgary Flames have lost 12 consecutive season openers. A stunning statistic, but perhaps more importantly, I brought this up earlier. The Flames kind of went out and embodied everything that we thought was going to be their issue. They kind of felt, even though it's only one game, like an identity-less team. Also,
a lot of shots, no finish.
And not a lot of angst or animosity or anything again, Battle of Alberta, Saturday night, you got your provincial rival there. They're off to a good start, the Oilers, that is, with the victory over the Canucks. You're thinking that there's going to be some fireworks, something, there's going to be, you know, you're losing in the third period, there's going to be something. It just felt flat for a Battle of Alberta to me.
What we learned, Murray versus Jackson could make for a Dirty Bird fight of a Super Bowl. Of course, Lamar Jackson, Baltimore Ravens, Kyler Murray, Arizona Cardinals. That would be an entertaining game from a quarterback perspective, that's for sure. It would be better than Geno Smith versus Ben Roethlisberger.
Yes, Jason, it absolutely would. We were accused of not talking enough Baltimore Ravens on this show, to which you replied in the inbox, is this Baltimore? This is your home of the Canucks, not your home of the Ravens. I will say, and we had Mike Tannier on the show, check out the Hour 2 podcast if you want to hear his hit. That win that Baltimore had against the Chargers on Sunday, where they just throttled a team, and more importantly, an offense that was putting up a ton of points. Statement game for the Ravens. They're now in that echelon, Mike said. Essentially, them and Buffalo. Those would be his top two picks to come out of the AFC, which is crazy because everyone going into the season thought, well, it's Mahomes and the Chiefs and then everyone else behind them. Maybe Buffalo challenges them. But through 6 weeks, you could make a pretty legit argument that Kyler Murray and the Cardinals and Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens would be a very tantalizing and very realistic Super Bowl matchup.
Has Kyler Murray been the story in Arizona, though, or is it the fact that this is a good team? Like, there's a lot of good players on that team.
Very balanced.
Yes.
When he hasn't had it, the couple games where he hasn't been lights out, they've been able to run the football pretty effectively. It's a bit of a committee that they've got there. Defensively, they're really good, especially in the secondary, led by guys like Buda Baker. On the weekend, they won without Chandler Jones, who might be their best defensive player, so it kind of underscores how good they are defensively. They are a very talented team with a lot of skill at a lot of important positions, and they just added Zach Ertz at tight end. So
is there a big-time favorite for the Super Bowl right now? I don't think there is.
I mean, here's the thing. You've got a 6-0 team that's done it in very impressive fashion.
Yeah,
and
but they're probably fifth, sixth, or seventh on the list.
And I bet they're probably below a handful of teams when it comes to betting on the Super Bowl.
Who is the odds-on favorite right now? Is it Tampa Bay? Because it's probably not Kansas City. It's probably Buffalo. You want to talk? I don't know. There's still that Buffalo.
I would say Tampa Bay is your betting favorite because they're defending champs, and they're probably, outside of the Cardinals, they're the one that everyone likes to come out of the NFC.
There's probably a lot of Cowboys bets right now because there's a lot of Cowboys fans.
Yep. You're going to get some money on Baltimore. You're going to get some money on Buffalo. I bet some people are still not counting out the Kansas City Chiefs either.
I'm looking at the standings right now. How bad is the AFC South?
Terrible. And you get to see half of it play tonight.
The Titans are 3-2.
Titans.
They're first. And then the Colts are 2-4, and then the Texans and the Jaguars are both 1-5.
Unsigned text here, but I think this might be from the Bruff troll. I don't know if he came over to Sportsnet 650 with us, but hashtag WWO, what we learned. Russell Wilson is the most cringe athlete in history. We were talking about that. The pregame.
Your size.
The coin toss.
Say it all.
The coin toss, just.
The pregame, are you talking about when they filmed him doing his drop back pass, like, by himself?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I think someone commented on Twitter. I can't remember who it was, but I kind of agreed. It seemed like, hey, are the cameras rolling? All right, here we go. Like Russ, take one.
Don't get me wrong. I know how it works pregame is they do Dak Prescott gets a lot of camera time because he does his little hip swivel dance and quarterbacks warming up in pregame. That's good B-roll camera footage fodder, whatever.
And the broadcasters are asking him to do that in a lot of cases.
Right. But the coin toss for overtime, like,
I was hoping he'd wear Pete Carroll's shoes.
I mean, that would spill my tea again here. That would have been a disaster. That would have been good. One game, he should just go dressed the exact same as Pete. Maybe he can do it closer to Halloween. He can head to toe. He can dye his hair gray. I think that would be fun. He likes dressing up in costumes.
Do you guys want the updated odds, by the way?
Yes, please.
It is the Bucks. Current odds at +500. Bills +550. Kansas City Chiefs still 750.
Yeah,
they have the third best odds.
Me.
The Cardinals are, sixth, seventh at +1,200.
Mm-hmm.
That's good value.
Yeah, maybe they haven't done it yet, right?
But they look very dangerous. That's
they do. Of course they do. How is Sat doing with that Browns performance? The Browns suddenly are 3-3.
They can't beat good teams. Let me you just look at their.
That's going to hurt them in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's going to make it very difficult to make the playoffs. Every time they have a big test, they fail it. Every time they put a bad team in front of them, they beat them. And it's because they're just good enough to do that because they run the ball so effectively. Although now all the running backs are hurt. Anyway, we don't need to spend a ton of time on the Cleveland Browns.
Burnaby Bob, I think, sent this one in last week. I wanted to read it, but I never got to it. What we learned, Chiasson is basically Taylor Pyatt, except my wife doesn't care for Chiasson.
Interesting. I saw this one last week, too, and I started thinking about it. And I guess physically, stature-wise, there are some similarities there. I don't remember. Was Pyatt a really good net front guy on the power play? I'm trying to remember. Honestly, it was so long ago, and I've seen so many players since
then. He was a big body.
He was a big
body that would get in front of the net, and he had a heavy shot.
Because Chiasson seems like exclusively like net front power play.
And not super fast.
Right. So I can see the similarities. It's not a bad one, to be honest.
Why are people so upset about Chiasson? I don't really understand it.
Well, you're not even saying it properly.
He was an insurance signing that you get for league minimum. He scored a goal, which is more than a lot of Canucks forwards can say.
He's already done his job. He scored a goal.
Brock Besser is going to return, and at that point, Chiasson will either be out of the lineup or down the lineup. Now, I can understand, and I will understand a little bit, if fans get upset if Chiasson stays in the lineup and a guy by the name of Podkolzin comes out of the lineup. But Podkolzin is going to be brought along slowly.
Yep.
Because he doesn't need to be brought along quickly. The Canucks, unlike in previous years, are not desperate for the young forward to play big minutes.
Yep.
Their forward group, although it hasn't scored as much as I'm sure they'd want to, has still looked good. They looked good against Detroit. The whole team looked good against Detroit. They should have won that game. Thomas Greiss was brilliant for the Red Wings, and that's why Detroit won that game.
I've seen a couple texts come in saying, like, essentially, the Canucks have looked good, but, or the Canucks have looked good in spite of, and it's talking about the lack of production from the forward group. I suppose you would like a little bit more, I'd probably say, from Horvat and Pearson, given the roles that they play, but the numbers overall, I think you're fine with. Right, I mean, Miller's got 4 points in three games. Garland's been a point-a-game guy. Pettersson's got 2 points in three games, so you can't really quibble with the production. Maybe you'd like him eye test-wise to be a little bit more prominent, but I also look back at that Detroit game. That's not a one-goal game by metrics. Like, metrics, they probably, I don't know what their expected goals would have been, but it would have been higher than one because Greiss made a bunch of saves, including the ones in the third period. I think there was the double save on Poolman and then Horvat.
Yeah.
And the goal disallowed, right? Let's not forget that. That was with the Hoglander goalie interference. So I'm not really too concerned about the production whatsoever. To be honest, the team has appeased a fair amount of my concerns going into the season in a small sample size. I realize it's only been three games, but you don't love them blowing the lead in Philly. Mm-hmm. That wasn't great, but you can admire the fact that they got out to the lead that they did. And then for large parts of the, you know, we were texting back and forth after the Detroit game. I didn't really have much, I keep saying quibble, but yeah, I didn't really have much to quibble with after the Detroit game.
Well.
They just got goalied
yeah.
by Grice. That's it.
Now, they need to get some wins on this road trip.
Yes.
But they should. And I hope they're feeling good about themselves. Like, I hope they feel like they're not a bad team. I hope they feel like this is not last season. Because you got some winnable games coming up. You got Buffalo tomorrow. And I know Buffalo has started out with two wins, but this is not a good team. You got Chicago on Thursday. And the Blackhawks might be off to the toughest start of any team in the NHL. Their fans are not happy. If you haven't been paying attention to what's going on in Chicago, and I guess a lot of people have, it just seems like everything is going wrong for this organization. This organization that was like the model franchise, what, 3 or 4 years ago? Mm-hmm. It wasn't that long ago that the Blackhawks were still being held up as this organization that does everything right. Mm-hmm. Now they're the organization that does everything wrong.
Well, our time at NBC coincided with the rise of the Blackhawks. There was no question that the Blackhawks were the darling of the National Hockey League. They were in almost every outdoor game. They were always featured prominently on all the big Wednesday night broadcasts. The Blackhawks were they were ratings gold for the NHL and NBC, at least at that time. That is
certainly. They played 20 outdoor games a season.
Every single year. And they just got new jerseys. They got a new third. You got to buy that. They were a money-making machine. We're way up against it for time. We'll read yours on the other side. What we learn is more coming up next. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650.
The official financial sponsor of Halford & Brough is ZLC Financial. It's your one-stop solution for all your financial and retirement needs in Vancouver. To learn more, visit ZLC.net. And remember, what do you have to remember, Mike? Advice is only as good as the person you ask.
I thought it was time is money.
Oh, I thought it was tie your shoes before you leave the house.
I forgot.
Money never sleeps.
I forgot the kicker on that one. Yeah. Coffee is for closers? Who's to say?
Just go to ZLC.net, okay?
Done.
Buy low, sell high?
Yeah. Stonks.
Yeah. Dom's like, it's all about crypto. All about crypto.
They can help you with that.
100% allocation crypto.
I'm going to get deep into NFTs. I decided over the weekend.
You should make your own.
If someone can make me a pixelated picture of a monkey, I will buy it for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Can you put on the Canucks game?
Right. Canucks game. Okay. Here's what's coming up today. With regards to your Vancouver Canucks, they are going to practice at 10:15 our time in Detroit. Shortly thereafter, there's going to be media Zoom availability with players and head coach Travis Green. That's the Canucks side of thing. On this station, coming up is the Jeff Merrick Show. As always, beginning right at 9 o'clock, first half hour, basically a condensed version of 32 Thoughts. Elliot Friedman joins Jeff on the show. Rangers, longtime Rangers play-by-play man, Sam Rosen is going to be on the show today as well. That's not all on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks. Shortly after the Jeff Merrick Show, and by that I mean right after, at 11 o'clock, it's the debut of our brand new show, the Canucks Hour, featuring Thomas Drantz and Jamie Dodd.
That's an original name.
The Canucks Hour?
How long is the show?
59 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And what's it about?
47 minutes?
It's about the Canucks?
Okay. It is about the Canucks, right, and it will last how long in length?
An hour.
Right.
Yeah.
Good.
With commercials.
Not counting the commercials. So, yeah, it's the maiden voyage for Drantz and Dodd as they get things underway. Dom had a bunch of clever puns that we could have used as a show name.
I thought it should be called Double D.
Right.
Or like the Double Double. Have like a Timmy sponsor.
Right. You need Canucks an hour in there somewhere, though.
Yeah. Or the D pairing.
Oh, now you're thinking.
Okay. You guys done?
Yeah, we're done.
All right. I wanted to read one more what we learned. This one's from Kevin from Coquitlam. What I learned this weekend, don't get excited on Friday about the games that you have to watch. My Canucks lost, my Lions lost, and my Seahawks lost. But the Whitecaps, Kevin, the Whitecaps. the Whitecaps got a big win over Sporting Kansas City. It was a Sporting win by the Whitecaps over SKC. There was a really good goal from Russell Tybert.
Yeah. Left-footed, outside the box, off the post and in. It's remarkable.
Okay.
I don't even remember the last time he scored.
So what? How far was it? It was outside the box?
Yeah. Yeah, it was about, I'd say about 20, somewhere between 20 and 25 yards.
Who's been with the franchise longer, Leonard Doozy or Tybert? Or
Russell Tybert?
Tybert's got to have a bunch of franchise records at this point. He's been here for forever. He's been 10 years. 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But overall, it was a tough weekend in terms of results. The Lions got spanked by the Stamps. The question is, did anyone notice?
Hard to
and
say.
I don't say that to be mean. I guess I am. I still remember the Lions when they were the glory team in Vancouver, and now they can have a game, and we're like, they get smoked in it's a big game for them at home against Calgary, and everyone's kind of like,
and then they just moved on with everything.
The Seahawks lost. The Canucks lost. But I thought played well on Saturday. Big game tomorrow for them. Well, not a big game. It's in Buffalo. But they need to start getting some wins on this road trip. They want to return home feeling good about themselves.
We got to get out of here, but we will be back tomorrow. Signing off, I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Brough, and he's been Nephew Dom. This has been the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.